Laura Erickson's passion and her mission is promoting the love, understanding, and protection of birds. In 1986, she started producing For the Birds. It's the longest-running radio program about birds in the United States. It airs on many community and public radio stations in the United States. It's also available as a podcast. You hear it here on KEXE, KBXE on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Laura has always done this program at her own expense. We have always been very grateful for this, Laura. That's one of our most talked about pieces that we run on KEXE, KBXE. And you've got some new stuff coming up. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here, Heidi.
Good morning.
And hi, John.
Hi. Hi, Laura. Good to hear your voice.
Well, we want to hear about some of your backyard birds and a lot of other things. But first, let's talk a little bit about, you've been producing this show for a long time and not getting really rich off of it, sounding like.
Well, there was one year that Michael Goldberg worked hard and got a grant. So I did get paid for one year, $300 a month, which was riches for
right.
me.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful. But I can completely understand why it's very hard to get underwriting for me for the program, because my agenda is 100% for the love, understanding, and protection of birds. And that sometimes goes contrary to what, you know, sometimes I speak out about things that affect birds that are more controversial than other things. And so I have mainly done this totally on my own. And my husband has been absolutely wonderful about that. He has subsidized me, though, these many years.
Well, I think you came up with a great idea. I mean, a lot of the people that listen to you listen to public radio. They understand the importance of supporting what they listen to and what they learn from. And you have kind of a similar model set up for people to support the work that you do. And you give a lot back to them. Tell us about this new events and things you have going on.
Well, it turns out I had a whole lot of speaking engagements that I was supposed to do this spring, and they all got canceled. And then I started getting a few requests when I talked to this group on Zoom. And that was pretty fun. I got to do PowerPoint presentations and things like that. And now I'm going to start doing that. I have some exciting personal news. I'm going to be turning into a grandma very soon, and I'm very thrilled about that. But that, at first, will cut back on my traveling because I'm going to be helping my daughter, she and her husband came here to Duluth. They were in New York City for the duration, so we'll be part of her household. And so I'm really liking doing these Zoom presentations, and so I suddenly realized, because I've never wanted to charge, and I had toyed with the idea of starting a Patreon thing so people could support my blog or my podcast radio show, but I don't have enough money and time to be generating a lot of gifts for that sort of thing as payback. And it suddenly occurred to me that I could try something brand new that would be for the people who support me on Patreon. So once every month, starting next week, July 1st, I'm going to be having, by invitation, a Zoom presentation. I'll answer people's questions and blather about birds, show off Pip the birding dog, because she is invisible on the radio, but she can show up on my on a Zoom presentation, and then show pictures and talk about birds. And that will be for my supporters. And I, you know, if anything turns out pretty cool on there, I may, you know, excerpt it for the radio show, but it's just as easy to produce the radio shows independently anyway.
It's pretty exciting times for birders and lots of things going on. What might be the subject of your first Zoom meeting?
I haven't decided yet. We're doing a kind of dry run so I can make sure I have it down pat for answering questions and things tomorrow with some of the first people who, I don't even know what you call it when people sign up for contributing via Patreon, but so I'll figure out how to deal with all that tomorrow and figure out the topic. I'll ask them what they want to hear about on the first actual presentation, but it will probably have something to do with the birds singing right now. We don't have a very long window of time anymore when our backyards are going to be filled with bird song. Pretty soon it'll just be some robins lackadaisically singing in the morning, house wrens when they feel like it instead of insistently, and red-eyed vireos will
be. Yeah, I was thinking the red-eyed vireo.
Oh, they're called the preacher bird because they're sort of like me. You know, they just go on and on, and you can't shut them up.
Well, it's a fair description of the red-eyed vireo, Laura.
But I love that bird. I did a blog post. I did like three radio shows on them in a row, and the blog post is called More About Red-Eyed Vireos Than You Thought You Wanted to Know. A woman named Louise de Curline Lawrence went out before dawn, even though they don't start up at dawn, to make sure she got everyone in Canada. This was back, I think, in the 1950s. It might have been the 40s. And she counted every single song a red-eyed vireo sang until sunset. Oh. She obviously had to be using a clicker. But she got over 22,000 songs.
Oh, my gosh. In the 16 or so hours of daylight that exists these days. Oh, my word.
But last week, I'd had red-eyed vireos on and off in May, but last they disappeared, I think, because crows got my last year's babies, and they were nesting near my yard again. As a matter of fact, this morning I was watching the pair with their three fledglings all insistently begging. But a red-eyed vireo turned up in my yard last week, and I've been putting out my recorder every morning to get all the songs I can get for the morning, and I didn't realize that my memory card was almost full. And when the red-eyed vireo kicked in, my recorder got 48 minutes of him singing. When I went out, it was at least 15 or 20 minutes and maybe more since my recorder had stopped, and the bird kept going for another half hour. But during that 48 minutes, I counted the songs for one 10-minute block. I didn't have to listen like Louise de Curline Lawrence did with a clicker. I could just count the little bumps on the wave form from my sound file. And I got 400 and some. I calculated that during just the 48 minutes, he had sung about 2,000 songs.
Oh, my word. Wow.
And I put some of my best recordings on my webpage now. If you go to lauraerickson.com, at the top, one of the categories that you can click on is miscellany. And if you click on miscellany, the second thing in the list is Laura's ambient sound recordings. And I have some that are over 2 hours, but I have the 48 minutes of red-eyed vireo songs in there.
You know, it's funny you should bring up that, because when I got out of bed this morning at about 4:45, I heard a robin singing right outside, and I know he'd probably been singing for 15 minutes at least before that. But the thought that I had in my head was, enjoy this. It's not going to last very much longer. And,
right.
And you're
when
right.
When you said 15 minutes, that is a gross underestimate.
you think he was up before 4:30?
Sometimes at 4.
Oh, my word.
When it's still totally dark.
Yeah.
And my robins are already going at it.
Oh, my word.
It's been like, but what I didn't realize was how early house wrens kick in. Because they can kick in 45 minutes before the sun's up, before dawn.
Wow.
And it's just, I've been so, I can't understand why it took a pandemic for me to start putting out my recorder every morning and just getting all the bird songs.
It sounds exhausting for the birds this time of year.
Oh, it is. One of the upcoming radio programs will be about that exact thing, because we always think winter is the hard season for birds. But once they go to bed at night, they can forget everything and just sleep. And the nights are long. Right now we have these short nights. Some robins will sing. I know that some individual robins sing the night through, because when I took my first college ornithology class in June 1975, I pulled an all-nighter to write one of my papers, and a robin sang throughout the entire night.
Just wanted to keep you company.
Yep. Yeah. It was really cool. But, yeah, that was such an amazing year for me, because everything was new. And I had never, ever imagined that any bird could sing all night long. And then as soon as they have, robins stop singing at first light. When the light is bright enough for them to see worms, then they have to attend to getting that part of their diet. And so they sing before dawn, and then they pick up and sing on and off throughout the day. Right now, my baby robins of the first batches are hopping around and taking bird baths and all kinds of cool things. Maybe that'll be what my first presentation will be about, because I set out a surveillance camera. It's called a bird cam that I bought back around 2005. But it's been taking, it's got a motion sensor and takes pictures and videos, and the baby robins have just been taking baths like there's no tomorrow.
Say, Laura, I've got a couple of observations that people made this past week, and some that I've made myself, and that is that there's been a significant decline in the frequency of hummingbird visits to my feeders. And I tried to explain it to people, but maybe you could bring science to the explanation.
Well, last night when I was looking out the window with my daughter, because we have some baby bunnies coming out of the yard, my female hummingbird went to the feeder right at like sunset. And she pigged out, and then she flew up into the apple tree, and there has to be a nest in that apple tree. And I don't know if the babies have hatched yet or not, but hummingbirds don't feed their babies sugar water.
Right.
What they feed their babies is a slurry of what the mother has eaten of insects and flower nectar. And there could be some sugar water mixed in there. But the main thing that baby hummingbirds need to grow isn't carbohydrates. It's protein,
right.
And they get that from flowers and all the, you know, we still have lilacs, though they're fading fast, and our, you know, apple blossoms are gone, but there's flowers out there now, and little bugs hovering around the tips of spruce, the growing spruce buds at the end of the branches and stuff. And hummingbirds are mainly focused on protein right now. The males are still hanging out there because females will re-nest at least once up here. And so the males stick around so that they, when females are interested, they can find a willing donor to produce these, the second batch. But even the males, this is a time when they can get protein very easily. And so they don't come to the feeders so much, even though they're still there. And you might think, oh, rats, my hummingbirds left. But no, right now is when your hummingbirds are guaranteeing that you'll have hummingbirds next year, too.
Precisely, yeah. Well, thank you for clearing that up. I had pretty much the same answer, that it's a need for protein this time of year. But I'm glad to hear that you agree with me, because oftentimes I just make stuff up.
Well, have we ever not agreed, John Latimer?
Well, I think of a time that we haven't, and those times when we haven't, I've always changed my opinion.
Well, you are so knowledgeable about such a broader range of things than I am.
Well, yeah, I think of you as one of those rivers that's not as wide, but very deep. And I'm one of those rivers like the Platte that's very wide and not very deep.
But guess which river all the Sandhill cranes go to?
Yeah. Speaking of that, we had a caller this morning, or an email this morning, or a caller who talked about being in Ham Lake, Minnesota, and seeing a pair of sandhill cranes walking their colt down the street.
Well, you know, they got to go somewhere. Cranes, like ducks, do their molting while they, you know, have their babies, because they can't fly off before the baby can fly anyway.
Right.
But cranes don't get totally flightless the way ducks do, because they have much bigger wing surface area relative to their body weight. But yeah, they walk around and wherever the baby happens to be. And I like that you use the proper name for a crane baby, which is a colt. Usually when we see cranes, we'll see one colt. They do produce two eggs. And if they don't get scared away, because they lay the eggs 1 to 2 days apart and start incubating when they lay the first egg, unlike ducks, which wait till they have the full clutch before they incubate at all, so the other eggs stay cool and they all have the same birthday. Baby cranes have birthdays 1 to 2 days apart. And so if the parents can stick around the nest, without any predators coming near or anything scaring them away with the first chick, then they'll be with the second chick too. But otherwise, that second egg, if it does hatch, that poor little baby will be lost. Every now and then we have a red letter day and see a pair of cranes with two colts, and that's like best case scenario.
All right.
We also, Laura, today we got a email with a video in it of a great blue heron. We heard from Lynn from Baxter, and they watched this heron catch, how many total? 12?
12 chipmunks.
Dip it in the lake and then eat it.
Herons become specialists. The baby herons, when they are independent of their parents and figuring out what the heck they can get to eat, once in a while they discover chipmunks, and they can get really, really good at hunting chipmunks. It's very disconcerting for me, because I adore chipmunks. And but it's what great blue herons do, and I love great blue herons, so I can't be too squeamish about it.
Yeah, I've seen what the chipmunks can do to my pea plants in the garden, and so I am actually advertising now for a great blue heron with an appetite for chipmunks.
On my blog, that's also the only place right now where I have a link to my Patreon account. But my blog is always the transcripts of For the Birds programs I put on my blog. That'll be that day's blog entry, and that will have a lot of photos too. So anytime I talk about something on the radio that sounds like you want to see the pictures, you can go to blog.lauraerickson.com or just go to lauraerickson.com, and one of the links at the top is blog.
Is that going to take us to your Patreon account too?
Yeah.
Excellent.
The blog will. Eventually, my webmaster is pregnant right now and is trying to finish up a whole lot of things at work, too. So she hasn't had time to totally update it yet. But that's where I'll be thanking people who contribute to my Patreon account, too.
All right.
Well, I don't know that you'd want the video, but I'm going to forward you the video of heron. that we got, so you can see that as well. And Laura,
KAXE has the most wonderful listening audience. I must say, I get more emails from KAXE listeners than any other source, including all my podcast listeners. And I hear such great stories. It's really exciting.
Well, Laura, thank you so much. We love playing for the birds, and good luck. We'll continue to announce how you are offering your readers and listeners extra bird information through Zoom and a way for them to support the work that you do. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, and you guys take care. It's lovely to talk to both of you.
Lovely talking with you as well, Laura. Thank you for joining us.
Sure.
You can find that information at lauraerickson.com. So she's kind of set it up as a patron for $1 a month. You get a monthly invitation to a Zoom meeting with her. And then it kind of goes up from there, $5 a month. And $10 a month, she will research and produce a podcast on the bird that you want. And you get to be a part of that Zoom. So check it out at lauraerickson.com.